And I want to welcome everyone to the Community Programming and Outreach Professionals Affinity Group. And you all had a fearless leader, Robin Dorfman, who was from Shalom Raleigh. And that was the reason this whole group began, really, because Lee Moore, the executive director, was adamant about creating something like this for professionals. And we got it together, and then Robin actually got another job. So she is no longer a part of this group. And I'm looking for a fearless leader. If anyone wants to volunteer to be the chair, that would be great. And then I'd have to, of course, get it approved by your CEO, unless you are the CEO. But just an FYI, that's what's going on. And that's it. Today we are going to talk about programs. I wanted you all to come prepared with some successful programs that we can all learn from each other, potentially to be able to do those programs in our own agencies. And then if you have flyers, we can upload them to the resource library and people can see them, even if they're not on this call, and could potentially reach out to you to ask you questions if they want to do it. So with that being said, it's a small group. I think everyone could probably present one if they want to. Linda, I see you came on. Welcome. Can you hear us? Can you hear us, Linda? Okay, if you can't, write in the chat button. Linda's calling in from Cincinnati. So anyone can jump in and can tell us anything they want to about any program they have.
I don't mind starting. We had a long history of doing community programs over time, but we never really had the best of attendance. And
what was it called? I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
It's kind of muffled. Does anyone else feel that? Oh, it's just me. Okay, I turned my speakers up. Well,
sorry. So a couple years ago, we came up with a program we call Soup for the Soul. It's held in the fall around Thanksgiving. I'll tell you a little more about it. But the history here has been that our community programs, we run a lot of different things related to the kinds of ways we're helping people. It could be around counseling, senior services, whatever. But again, the attendance is sporadic. It was always a struggle to get people to come to programs. And at the same time, my board has always struggled with doing fundraisers that raise money. They always put on nice parties, but they didn't necessarily raise money. I see some of you are smiling, so you know what that's about. So things kind of came together a little bit planned, but a little bit just because they fell together well, that we finally decided, and part of the problems with the fundraising, some of you might have this too, is that the board didn't mind asking once during the year, but they didn't want to go back to friends, relatives, associates, business people more than once. It just was something, you know, most people, they don't like to ask for money. So we came up with an idea of a sponsorship for the agency for the year. So it's one ask for everybody. We had some success with that. It allowed everybody to relax around raising money in fundraising events. We didn't need those kinds of big events anymore. And it allowed us to focus on community events, which I always thought was a better driver of people to our mission in terms of people who are aligned with us, people who might want to volunteer and maybe eventually be board members or donors or whatever. So we came up with this idea of Soup for the Soul. It's basically about food insecurity, primarily with seniors in our community. We have a large senior program, so it made sense that we would focus on them. But we also talk about families, that also low-income families and their struggle with food insecurity. And we were able to find a few board members who really took this mission on, and they drove it. And it's really the first time I've experienced the board really leading. They like the idea, they like the mission. I think they also like the idea that we de-emphasize having to raise money. The goal was not to lose money, and if we made a few bucks, whatever we made would go into our senior program, primarily for our emergency food assistance. So the mission is a good one. Who doesn't want to feed people? And these few board members really put their heart and soul into it. So the first year we had 75 people come. The idea was that Soup for the Soul was that we were only going to serve soup and bread, give everybody a taste of how some people in the community really need to eat to get through the month with their limited income. And it was a good idea in concept, but the problem was this: everyone on the board pitched in with a large bowl, bucket of pot of soup, and we bought some from some vendors, and the soup was excellent. So everybody had actually a very wonderful meal and didn't mind it was just soup and bread. But from that modest beginning, 75 people had a really good experience. We had a little bit of a program to educate them on food insecurity and some of the things we're doing in the community to address that. And then the next year we went up to over 100 people. And this past year in November, we had about 175 people, which for us in this small community, we've never had 175 people come out for anything we've ever done. So it really told us we're on the right track. The program is a good one. The board is really each year gets more and more enthusiastic to do it. And we found, you know, it's still of the 175, I wouldn't say we found 175 donors or friends to the agency, but it has brought a lot of new faces to us and we're educating people. And I'm sure we're all struggling with the same issue. We're, you know, the best kept secret in the community until you need our help. So for us, it was really a home run. We have more people coming. We raised a few dollars. It aligns with our mission. And the board was very enthusiastic and wants to continue it. So that's our success story around running a really good program in the community that was well received.
People have questions to ask around this? Yeah.
I have a question. I'm just curious in making the switch from the several time a year ask in fundraising to a single ask. Was there a difference noticed in the funding amount being raised?
Major. The thing that surprised me was, you know, we would do sponsorships for events. And if we got a handful or some in-kind support, at the end of the year, I don't think we ever raised more than $15,000-$20,000 in that kind of sponsorship. The first year doing this, we raised $30,000 in one ask. And we had it up front at the beginning of the year when some of our other funding is a little shy, where we really need the extra money.
How much did you ask for from each person? You said it was the same ask.
Yeah. Well, what we did was, you know, we had like platinum level, gold level, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Mostly, my vision was we were going to target the businesses that we had always targeted. Some of them, you know, were board members, had businesses. It was mostly associates of board members and people in the community. And what surprised me was some of the board members themselves became sponsors of the agency above and beyond any other board commitment they had. And we didn't anticipate that. We have some board members who give annually to support certain programs. And then a few of them, this is, I think, the fourth year we're doing it. And most of them have continued throughout, either at the same level or they've increased. And now in the last year was our third year, we raised over $60,000, which was floored all of us. And the board president is very enthusiastic about this. And he basically says, we have a board of 18 to 20 people. He said, if everybody gets one, we're done. Now, what happens is a few people get two, three, or four, and a few people still don't get any. But the message has always been that if you just get one, we'll be fine. And some people get, you know, a $250 sponsor, and some people are getting a $5,000 sponsor. But by March, we have the money in the bank. We have a very nice banner. We promise to advertise the sponsors in all sorts of different ways. And I would say when I look at the list, a little more than half are businesses and maybe 40% are individuals. And most of those individuals are either, you know, past presidents, past board members or current board members. And that's the part that surprised me. And that's been consistent throughout. So it's really been very successful and it's allowed the board to really relax around the fundraising types of things we're still trying to do, not trying to kind of kill them. And now they don't feel like we're trying to pick their pocket or their friend's pocket.
Right.
Right.
The whole attitude is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really been terrific.
Thank you. Thank you.
It definitely sounds like something that agencies could potentially do, but you have to get your whole board on board to do that because it's really shifting the way that you raise money.
Yeah.
You're asking for it once and then offering a lot of community programs, but I like the idea. If you have any information about that, send it so we can put it in the board, you know, in the resource library.
I'll send you, we have like a letter we send out to potential sponsors and different ways we honor them and publicize them. I can send you some of that.
That'd be terrific. So Linda just emailed me. She had to jump off. Something came up in her office that she has to deal with. She's hoping to get back on. And I see that Matthew Bolton just came on. Matthew, can you hear us? Hey, where are you calling in from? Can you?
It's on mute.
Oh, you're on mute. I have to unmute you. You have to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I'm Matthew Bolton. I'm director of the JFCS Squirrel Hill Food Pantry with JFCS Pittsburgh.
Okay, great. So, this is the first time you've come here.
Yeah, right? Sorry I'm late. It's just been a hectic week. So.
Terrific. It's a small group, and we'll get a lot of, we'll learn a lot from each other.
Great.
So who else wants to talk about a program that they have that's been successful? Unless people have more questions for Jerry.
Okay. Baltimore would love to talk if we're done with Jerry's finished.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so we're actually going to give the group an option, two choices. First, not to be difficult, but we don't do any fundraising through our agency. So when we think of community programs, we think of community education programs, not that the others aren't, but not for the purpose of fundraising, really solely for the purpose of community programming. So two programs to offer. One was a program that was just through Jewish Community Services, and it was an addiction-related substance use program. And then the second program was one where we collaborated very widely with Associated Catholic Charities, MedStar Health, which is a huge hospital network, National Alliance for Mental Illness, our Baltimore Jewish Council, and a few other organizations. And that one we attracted 600 people to. The addictions program that we did in the fall, which was, we thought, incredibly successful, is 300 folks, and we did that at a local synagogue. So would folks want to hear more about the program that we did sort of just JCS doing it, or do you want to hear about sort of this global partnership?
JCS.
Okay. All right. So then that's Howard.
Hey, hi.
Okay.
So we collaborated. Okay, we've been in business doing community education for 30-some years. This was the largest event in the last 30 years. Basically, we brought to Baltimore Freedom Song, which is a play out of Beit Teshuvah in L.A.
I love Beit Teshuvah. They're terrific. I've worked with them in the past when I was in Greenwich. They're wonderful.
Yes, and we brought them to Baltimore. And we formed a coalition with a major synagogue, the local Jewish undertakers in Baltimore, who are very funeral home, because they've seen a lot of opioid overdose deaths of young adults, and they contributed money. A number of families gave money to us who've lost kids to the epidemic. With a number of other Jewish and non-Jewish partners to help with funding and advertising. And standing ovations. We also brought in from the local scene a chorus from Baltimore, as in Down and Out Baltimore. They blew the house away. Freedom Song blew the house away, so much so that not this spring, but the following spring, we're going to do a returner engagement, and we'll probably have anywhere from 3 to 4 different venues and the backing of probably $10,000 to $15,000 to pull that off. So there is a precedent for doing a program like this. And again, if someone wants the nitty gritty, be happy to share that at a later time.
You have a question, Jennifer? So, do people know what Beit Tzedek is?
Beit Teshuvah, a rehab program on the West Coast, based on Jewish principles and 12-step principles. And they have a touring company that does a musical presentation. On one side of the stage, it's a family getting together for Pesach Seder and all the drama that goes on with that. On the other side is a 12-step recovery meeting, treatment, and the drama that goes on there. And it's just exquisitely done.
It's like This Is Us. When we brought them to Greenwich, JFS of Greenwich, we did something. We didn't bring in the Freedom Song play. We brought in the owners or the people who founded it, and they did a training for professionals, Jewish professionals in the community, and all professionals, not just Jewish. And then at night we did a community program. They did a community program for everyone. And people in the community whose family members had overdoses from addiction actually paid for it as well. That's something that I think is a good sell because they're so well known. And if you know people in your community, they could really, you know, you could partner with synagogues, you can partner with other organizations to provide training, provide the Freedom Song. I'm sure that was a success. We didn't charge anything to people that came to the training or to the community night. Did you charge anything, Howard?
We did not. We did collections afterwards, and we got $600 unsolicited, just from the straight up from the audience. And we divided it, $300 for the local group, $300 for Beit Teshuva. We were able to pull together $5,500 in sponsors to pull the event off.
That's how much it costs to bring them in?
$5,000 to bring them in for one venue, one time. We're looking at a little bit less expensive. We're trying to set them up one city, three or four different venues.
Right.
But yeah, $5,000.
I do know one thing about Beit Teshuva is that they have people in every community. So in Charlotte and Pittsburgh and Minneapolis, probably in Birmingham too. So if you were to call them, contact them, say that you heard about it from Howard in Baltimore or NJHSA, you know, do they have any people that they could recommend that you talk with in your communities? They would have someone, and then you could potentially set something up with other agencies. That's a really good,
correct.
That's a really good idea. I mean, if that's something that anyone here is interested in.
Yeah.
So if you have any of the information, that'd be great. If you could send it, we'll put it in the resource file.
Okay, cool. All right. Very good. Thank you.
So does anyone else want to talk about a program, Jennifer?
Sure. I can talk about, we're currently doing a senior grocery initiative. This is actually a federally funded program. We're doing it through our local community food bank. And we're delivering 30 pounds of groceries to older adults suffering from food insecurity once a month. And we're doing that through volunteers. Just from corporate partners and just volunteers from the Jewish community and the community at large. So we're just trying to meet the needs of older adults through that and engaging in with a lot of community partners to do that. So we're serving about 42 clients each month.
So how do you advertise that? Like, how does that get, you know, known in the community that JFS of Birmingham is doing it?
So as far as getting volunteers or the clients?
Both. Clients, volunteers. And I was thinking more like Jerry was talking about getting known in the community that you're doing something that's so good for, you know, people in need.
Sure. So we've been very fortunate enough to get some press. We've had newspaper articles. We've invited the local television stations to come out, and they've done, you know, personal interest stories following the volunteer from arriving to pack their groceries and getting their assigned client and then taking the groceries to the assigned client and then interviewing the client, how that's impacting them. So through all of those newspaper and television spots, we've had just people calling and emailing saying that they want to volunteer. And through corporate sponsors of our agency, we've reached out to them as well. A lot of them have community service required hours for their associates, and they have partnered. We do find that many people are recurring volunteers, even though they may have been voluntold through their work. Many of them find it so enjoyable, and it's a quick, easy volunteer opportunity. They continue to come back. And it gives us also an opportunity to have extra eyes on our clients. So just make sure they're well and taken care of properly.
Mm-hmm. I like that. You could potentially do a soup for the soul kind of an activity.
Yeah.
Doing, you know, to play off of what you're doing already.
Right.
So I don't know, Amy, do you have a program that you think is something we should...
Sure. So we have an interesting program. We have a LGBTQ.
I'm so sorry. Did anyone have questions for Jennifer? I didn't mean to cut anyone off. Okay. Sorry. Start again.
That's all right. So we have a program called J Pride, which is a program for the LGBTQ community. And the program, there was a time when the program was really all happy hours. And it has really evolved over time, partly because of the leadership that we've had in the program for the last, it seems to become a rabbinic training ground. So my last J Pride coordinator is in rabbinic school, and my current one is applying. And so I get them for 2 years, and then they go off to rabbinic school. But anyway, the last one started a program, started looking at some other ways to get involved with holidays and how people in the community who are participants, did they want to get involved with planning some activities. And so for Pride 2 years ago, we had a small service near the park where Pride was being held. And it was put together by a small group of people who dubbed themselves the Ritual Squad. And so they sort of self-selected. And we had 50 people show up. We had no idea that we were going to have anybody. And this is all done through social media. So there's no flyers, there's nothing. And so the Ritual Squad has really taken off. And last year they decided what we really want is we would like to have a Seder. And so they created a grassroots Seder. We had 70 people. It was all led by the community. Everybody had a role. It was about as inclusive as it could be in terms of having an ASL interpreter, having it accessible for folks with disabilities. We just had as much as we could. We had vegan options. It was everything. And people brought, some people brought, some of the food. We provided some of the food. We have a program also at JFCS where we provide bags of ritual food items for families in need, and so I just had that person order enough that we could supply, help supply at the Seder. And so this year we're doing it again, and we have found a location. Last year's location was sort of a hodgepodge because we had no idea what kind of a response we were going to get. We were literally hauling tables and chairs. This year a synagogue has opened their doors, and it's a very inclusive synagogue, so it feels like walking into a synagogue won't be a barrier for people. And so I think we'll be able to increase the number of attendees available. But again, it's all been done by the participants under the leadership of my staff person. So it's been good.
It sounds expensive.
Didn't cost us anything.
Food for 70 people for a Seder.
I mean, other than some of the, we didn't pay for the location, and we won't again this year. Everybody brought some component of the food. So other than the ritual foods like gefilte fish and soup and things like that, we provided it, or they provided it. Because I was ordering, my staff person was ordering for their program, we just ordered enough. Grape juice and that sort of thing. It was actually one of three Seders that the organization participated in or held last year. We did a Seder for our inclusion program. So that program, we had about 120 people at that Seder, and it's for people in our with developmental or physical disabilities and their family members. And for some people it's or friends. And for some people it's their only Seder that they'll have for the whole time. So we did that one day. And then we did Freedom from Addiction Seder and another day. And then we also did this Seder. So we were involved in a lot of Seders last year as an organization.
Amy, how do you fund the position that works with the Pride community?
Good question. It was originally funded, so the program is now in its 14th year, and it was originally funded by a couple of gentlemen who approached the organization and said, you need to do something. For the last few years, we've had one funder who has funded the whole program. She passed away last year, and luckily there's enough funding and she had enough planning that we're okay for a while. We have anything above and beyond that comes out of our general operating, but we do we are doing some additional fundraising this year to try and, especially as we've had so much success. We had, I'll be talking about this at the conference, but we had Keshet in the community. And so Keshet and I are going to be presenting there, but Keshet was did this year-long leadership institute and then transitioned essentially all of the programs back to us for ongoing education. And so the nice part is that that has continued to build our credibility as we go out to the community and do fundraising. We also implemented a fee-for-service model around our speaking and our family life education programs, and we've sort of wrapped J-Pride into that as well. So so our J-Pride coordinator is charging for some of the trainings that we're doing.
That's terrific. You know, NJHSA is doing a year-long training with, I think, five agencies right now are working with Keshet. And we're doing it again next year if anyone's interested in bringing that to their communities.
So my predecessor,
way to begin your whole programming of LGBTQ, right?
Right. So my predecessor here went to Keshet, and so she and I are going to be presenting together because we've worked collaboratively for the last 2 years.
That's great.
I'm programming here.
Well, those Seders sound very interesting. I mean, I don't know. They're probably proprietary. Is that the right word? I don't know if Minneapolis. But if you...
Not necessarily. There is a Jewish funder. There's a Jewish... I just blanked on the name of it. But there is a program around addiction in the community, which has just... It has always been volunteer-driven, and it has gradually... It's transitioning to be more institutionalized with us, and we have an addiction coordinator. And so we're taking more of a role in that Seder. The other Seder is one that a family, we've done it for years, and a family funds the majority, although not all of it. And that is part of our program, our Caring Connections Inclusion Program. And that program, we have, part of why we have so many people is that we have a lot of people who live in group homes. And so we allow people to bring in order to get that one Jewish person from the group home, we often have to say, bring everybody. And so so they bring eight people from the group home and so forth.
Yeah, right? Stacy Spencer.
Yep. So Stacy's right? Stacy's one of my staff.
So if you think that that's something that the NJHSA member agencies could benefit from, that'd be great to see those Seders, because it is... You know, very interesting to have it specific to that population, you know.
Yes. So for the Caring Connections Seder for individuals with disabilities, it's literally an invitation. So it's just a postcard that comes to just those folks and their group homes or families. And then for the, there's nothing on social media. We do a kind of a wrap up after in our publications, but we don't really promote it before because it's not open to everybody. And then the J-Pride Seder is all done via social media.
I meant the Haggadahs.
Oh, the Haggadahs. Yes, I can definitely, the Haggadah, we don't use a Haggadah for the Caring Connection Seder. We actually have a Seder leader and song leader, and so it's up on the big screen. So many of the people can't read individually. And so we don't have a separate Haggadah for that one, but we do for the J-Pride Seder. I will actually pull that and see if I can get that to you, Lisa.
Terrific. So you said a lot of different things, great ideas. I love the idea of having a program with a big screen, you know, for people that have a difficult time reading, whether it's seniors or who knows what, for any kind of programming.
It's worked out really well.
I know that already, but I never thought to do that in any of my programming at nursing homes and whatnot that we did. That's a good one. So anyone else have any questions for Amy or thoughts? Okay. What do you got, Rachel? Do I have to unmute you?
No, I got it. Okay, so I thought I would share one of our kind of educational awareness campaigns that we do. So one of our core competencies at JFS Charlotte, in addition to the direct services that we offer in our mental health and our case management and food pantry program, is that we do educational programs for the Jewish community. So I thought that could be kind of interesting. So in October, we do an educational campaign for Domestic Violence Awareness Month for the Jewish community. And this year we did a campaign called the Lighting the Way to Peace campaign, which I did not create that term. That is something that's used nationally that I found online. But we did it in a couple of different ways. So leading up to our main event, we created a postcard and little sort of mini poster that we put all around. So in Charlotte, it's we're sort of unique here because a lot of Jewish life is concentrated at what's called Shalom Park, which is a campus where we have two synagogues and the JCC, JFS offices, the day school, the preschool. So in a way, we're a little spoiled because our campaign can be at one physical location. But I think this could be recreated even if it were more spread out. So we created this little poster that said Lighting the Way to Peace, and I can send this to you, Lisa. And it has some facts. We created some other collateral materials that have facts and graphs about how domestic violence affects the Jewish community specifically. And our symbol was a purple candle. So we asked for these small posters and purple faux candles to be put in the lobby of all of our community partners on the park. So the synagogues had them, the JCC had them at their front desk, we had them at the front desk at the schools, everywhere, so that in the month of October, everyone was seeing these lit purple candles with these pictures of the story of domestic violence affecting the Jewish community. So it was, and then we have these, they're called silent witnesses, and this is used for domestic violence campaigns across the country. They're large cutouts. So we have large purple people. And traditionally a silent witness would have the story of someone who died because of domestic violence. For Shalom Park, we altered that, and we had the same graphs and facts about domestic violence affecting the Jewish community. With our audience, and especially with having so many kids on campus, we decided that that would be more effective. So our first awareness campaign were the purple people and these lit purple candles all over. And that was for the month of October. So sort of to get a buzz, we had large banners, which are like big posters when you drive into campus, that said Lighting the Way to Peace. and then our main event was held in the lobby of the JCC. So anyone coming in, so we had a big program of our seniors coming in for a Parkinson's lunch. And we had everyone coming into the gym that day. We had a lot of programming on the day that we chose to do our Lighting the Way to Peace main program. We had a table set up, and we created, we had a large poster created of fiberglass. So it's a permanent piece, and it's our Lighting the Way to Peace banner, and it has the image of the purple candle, and it says Lighting the Way to Peace. And then we invited community members to write their message of peace on our banner and to take with them a small purple candle. I used to have them all over my office, but I think they've all at this point finally died. So it was a small LED candle, and we ordered like 1,000 of them online from Amazon or something. Mm-hmm. So that they could take them and put them all over their desk. So everyone on Shalom Park had these little lit candles on their desk. Everyone who came to the gym or the senior programming that day could have these little purple candles that they could take home with them, in addition to some JFS collateral materials, of course. But you know, I wasn't sure how people would react to the idea of signing our board. And we just said, we invite you to write your own message of peace. And then I had the table staffed by my therapist. And I'm really glad that I did, because we had, especially a lot of our seniors, open up and tell stories of their experience with domestic violence. We had everybody from preschool moms dropping off their kids and going to yoga class, to people coming to the Parkinson's lunch, and everyone in between. And they wrote their message of peace, not signing their name, just writing their sort of message. And it's a large, it's probably about the size, a little bigger than one of the pictures behind me. And it was done on sort of a fiberglass, so it's nice permanent material. We had it done at the, I don't know, our marketing person had it done at the place that makes signs. And it was a really, really great program. And then we had the idea to have it be up permanently in our lobby. So after that day, so that was sort of the end of our domestic violence awareness campaign. We had it installed in our lobby with an explanation and pins next to it. So after that, our clients who weren't able to see it have since then been able to really fill it out and write their message of peace. And I don't know how long we'll keep it up there, maybe till next year, but it was a really successful program. And, you know, we probably had 75 or 80 people walk by the table that day. And, you know, some of them just walked by and sort of glanced and then would maybe come back and pick up a candle. And some of them really interacted with us. But it's been able to continue by being in our lobby, and hopefully, you know, many more saw the candles throughout the month of October. So different than the other kinds of, you know, we do a lot of programs, but I thought I would present something that was a little bit in our more like educational outreach realm. So that was that.
Great. Anyone have any questions, thoughts? I do. I think that was genius, and you could do it for any kind of awareness, I imagine. But I wonder what you did after that. So were there support groups for people who had been, you know?
Oh yeah, so that's probably important to say. So one of the, JFS of Greater Charlotte, we are domestic violence services. Especially for the Jewish community, we're kind of the first stop for a lot of folks for domestic violence. So actually all over Shalom Park, and this has been years, there are small little purple stickers in all of the bathrooms that say, you know, are you unsafe in your relationship? Call this number, and it's JFS. So we have a relationship with our county domestic violence services, where especially for the Jewish community, a lot of folks are not going to call our shelter first or our county program first, they're going to call us first. So we do a safety assessment, work with them on a safety plan, and then if appropriate, get them linked to the shelter or to the specific domestic violence program that we have through Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so so we have the follow-up services right. In our emotional health and well-being core right. competency, which is what we call our counseling center. So that's an important thing to say. And at that table, I had it staffed by, you know, I was there the whole time and my therapist staff. And then we had cards for our mental health services. So when people signed the board, certainly for anybody, you know, who were sharing anything with us, we handed them collateral materials, and we tried to hand everyone collateral materials, because even though we're all here in Shalom Park, I still hear, what? Oh, Jewish Family Services? I've never heard of that. What do you guys do? You have that food pantry, right? Like, everyone knows that we have a food pantry because they donate food at the high holidays, but sometimes they think that's all that we do. So, so that's important.
I think that's a really brilliant idea to do for any kind of issue, especially if your JFS is, you know, working on that issue, to do some sort of fabulous, you know, big splash of a month-long event. I like that idea. And I don't know if anyone else has done something like that, but it's a good one. So send us anything you have. I like that. Matthew, okay, food pantry. Everyone loves a food pantry.
Yeah, what new things in the food pantry? I will say one of the big things is serving a low-income community, and we do get some immigrants, refugees, possibly some undocumented workers as well, that we brought in somebody from the upcoming Census Bureau to talk to all of our staff about frequently asked questions and a good understanding of what the census entails, including some information, so that we can ensure that our clients are well represented, so that, those federal dollars do come to where they're needed. So that's one of the few things we've been able to do recently. They're gonna be tabling. The first part was educating our staff. They'll be tabling soon as well, and hopefully getting our clientele comfortable with representing themselves at the upcoming census.
So are people concerned, of course, if they're here illegally, that they're going to be, you know, carted off? I mean, what is that?
So I would say that there's a lot of misunderstandings. I think about 8 months ago, perhaps, there was a big federal fight to add something onto the census stating, are you an American citizen or not? And then tied in with another recent legislation, I can't remember what it's called now, it's from a 1800s law stating, and this is something with the refugee immigration piece, where the current administration's trying to withhold people coming in who may be on, who may need to take on government support services. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like a catch-22 that if you fill out the census, it could possibly be used against you because it's a federal document and you would be committing a felony. That's where some of the, and that it's not true. And after so many legal fights, that question was not left on the census. But there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so it's just ensuring that people feel safe knowing that it's not shared with the federal government, with the actual people's names and so forth.
Right. I've heard of other agencies that are actually bringing in someone from the census to do that because people are confused, not even who are immigrants or, you know, refugees, just people are confused about how to do it. So that's probably a good idea and timely.
Definitely.
You know. So does anyone else have another program they want to share? Does Beth want to tell us about the collaborative one, or does someone have another program? Are you still here with us, Beth?
I am. I'm here.
Hey.
So this program, it's a community awareness program, and it's around reducing stigma related to behavioral health. And we use, it's interesting, it just coincidentally, the Freedom Song used drama and music, and actually this program used an organization locally, and but I think it's in a lot of other cities, called Stoop Stories, not, you know, independent nonprofit, and they bring folks from the community to around various issues and topics all year long for these sort of, and they tell their story related to whatever the topic is. So the idea was we wanted to do something around reducing stigma and behavioral health. And the partnership kind of came together through some meetings with our executive director and some of the executive directors of other organizations, that this was something we were all working on together as part of the greater Baltimore area. And so we came together, we reached out to Stoop Stories, and they loved it. I mean, we had to pay them, I think it was, I want to say $5,000. They put out the call to the stories, and we had these,
we rehearsed them,
our group, our planning group met several times to go over the logistics, and we actually wound up having it at one of our local temples, which is just very centrally located. But it was, the attendance was really diverse. So the storytellers themselves, I think, brought some of their folks, but, and the hospital system put it out, and Catholic Charities put it out. So we really were very, very well represented from, I think, all of our agencies across section.
So much so that this year.
Yeah, so much so that this year we're actually doing it again, using a similar model. We're going to do it at one of the universities. And the focus this year, based on some additional funders who want to work with us, is focused on substance use. And we're really trying to target college age, young adult, sort of that population. Mm-hmm. So that's our challenge this year, is to really try to reach that program through some of our Hillels, but also with our other partners as well. And so Stoop Stories has just put the call out for the stories, for people to come and tell their stories. And they're given a limit. Like the first program we did,
7 people, 7 minutes.
7 people, 7 minutes. And we tried to do a little too much in our first year. And people told their stories, and then there was a break. And then we did a panel of professionals and did Q&A from the audience, and that did not go over as well as we had hoped. We think this year we're tweaking it. It's going to be the storytellers, and then leaving Q&A for those storytellers to share their, you know, more of their personal journeys and experiences. So it's very it's really gained some momentum and traction, and it's a type of partnership that we never dreamed that we could really do, that just kind of came together so beautifully that we're hoping to move forward, you know, see where it goes. There you have it.
So wait a minute, do people have questions, thoughts about what?
And they're free. We do not, both the programs, we do not charge. They are free and open. And obviously, marketing and, you know, is a key component. And it was live streamed. MedStar helped. So actually, in addition to the bodies that were there, it reached twice as many through live stream.
My question is, so Stoop Stories,
mm-hmm.
people that tell their story about whatever the
right.
subject is. And this year, you're not going to bring in the experts. You're not going to bring in other people to talk about their stories. Only the people that are actually part of the Stoop Stories.
Now, the Stoop Story is an organization that has some public cred, and they invite members of the public to audition for each of their programs.
Okay.
So they're the ones with the reputation of being able to pull it off in very succinct, well-polished, but at the same time, it's just your next-door neighbor talking.
Right.
Okay, that's very interesting.
But I know that those types of storytelling nonprofits programs do exist in other cities and communities, maybe called something different, but just to be able to partner with that type of medium.
Storytelling nonprofit.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to just mention something else you said, Beth, which probably all of you are doing, but, you know, actually working with like Hillel, you know, they are always looking to partner, as I understand, with organizations too. So something like this, your expertise, bringing them in, or even going to, you know, their campus. I don't know.
Yeah. We're hopeful. We've tried for years to partner with Hillel in various ways, whether it's community program. I know the addiction stuff, Howard tried to do some programming. So that's always been sort of, they're so busy and program doing what they're doing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Trying to get students to their programs, and you know, so we'll let you know this year how it works.
Well, I'm telling you, I love having this small group, as I said, because we really got to hear so many different kinds of programs. I mean, if I was running the agency, I'd be picking up on a lot of these ideas, because I think that if one person has had success and you know how to do it, potentially other agencies can do the same. So, you know, let us know if you do anything.
Thank you for hosting it. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So our next call is on May 27th at 1. So that's after the conference. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot of programs that we'll hear about then. Maybe we could have someone present from that, or we could, you know, other people will come and we can talk about other programs that people have. And if you have anything specific that we want to talk about, just email me and we can, you know, designate a whole hour to addictions programming or older adult services programming or food pantry programming. So that would be great. Anything else? Anyone? Well, it was good seeing you all, and I'll look forward to the next time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
And send me everything. Goodbye. Bye.